Okay, hold on. Let me.
No, I'm telling you. Okay, tell me when you're ready. I'm ready.
Okay. From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Southwest District Health, which covers Adams, Gem, Payette, Canyon, and Washington counties, will no longer offer the COVID-19 vaccine at its district offices. After a board of directors meeting yesterday, with more than 300 public comments against the vaccine, as well as presentations from well-known doctors that included Ryan Cole, these doctors spread misinformation about vaccines. The board voted 4-3 against administering the vaccine in their offices. So what does this mean for folks who live in that district? Well, Dr. David Pate is joining us today to talk more about this. Of course, he is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Dr. Pate, good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gemma.
Okay, so Dr. Pate, let's first talk about the fact that there was this meeting held to discuss whether or not to offer the COVID-19 vaccine within the district offices. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think there's two things that immediately come to me. One is it's very unfortunate because probably the people making this decision probably can afford the vaccine or have insurance that will cover the vaccine. What our district health offices do is provide a great service for those people who particularly are uninsured or unable to afford the vaccine. And so what this means is that we're just hurting those that are less well-off Idahoans that want to get the vaccine, because we don't force anybody to get the vaccine. So these would have been people that wanted it, and now they're going to have a financial barrier. The second thing that hits me is that it is really shocking to me, because I'm so naive, that we're still having this debate here more than, you know, we're probably about almost four years from when the vaccines came out. And, you know, early on, there were lots of questions and you could understand some of the concerns, but we've got tons and tons of data now. And the fact that there is this group of physicians that are still able to promote scientific nonsense and scare people, and then have a public health board of all people fall for it and vote in favor of the vaccine disinformation, it's just disheartening.
Mm-hmm. R. Troy Oppy was following this meeting yesterday, Dr. Pate, and he said that one of the arguments is taxpayer dollars. And the argument for no longer offering this is folks saying, well, we shouldn't have our tax dollars paying for these vaccines. With that said, tax dollars don't pay for this because health districts do get this at a very discounted rate. So therefore, they are able to offer it at a discounted rate. And the out-of-pocket expense will now go up, as you mentioned, for people who do want the option. So how will that then potentially, you know, I'm thinking of someone that has gotten all of their shots at a district health office, and now they don't have that option anymore. And if they are not insured, or maybe they are insured, but it doesn't, you know, they have to cover some of the cost, right? This might...
Right, and... Yeah, sorry, go right ahead.
What I was going to say was that I wonder how much this would hinder someone's ability to get the vaccine if it is something that they want to have.
Well, it will be a hindrance for some. I personally don't think we should put those kind of barriers up. And like so many of their arguments that fail on their face, there's another side to it. So even if they were right that they are being great stewards of our tax dollars, they're really not, because when these people get sick with a vaccine preventable illness when they get severely ill and they go in the hospital, then a lot of times many of these people are going to be covered by the state with, guess what? Our tax dollars. And it's like the old saying, a penny of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We're being foolish because it's so much more expensive to take care of sick people and the complications that can ensue than it is to prevent an illness. So it just, they don't make good arguments.
And Dr. Pate, when we look at these public comments, and as I mentioned, there were more than 300 of them against the vaccine itself. And I want to just read just one of them. It says, has the COVID shot not done enough damage? Please do not continue to inflict this on our children. The CDC is wrong, and we are tired of their self-serving policies. I know you've looked at these comments, Dr. Pate. What is your reaction to the fact that there are more than 300 comments that are not just against this? And that was a very light response to this. There were other comments that are much more in depth, lots more misinformation. But what are your thoughts in regards to the fact that people still want to completely get rid of the COVID vaccine? And I ask that question because you don't have to get it if you don't want it.
Well, I think that is the key thing. So that they're making arguments that are not what I call internally consistent. When I listen to people try to persuade me of a point of view, I listen to see, are they internally consistent with their arguments? So what do I mean? The point that you just did. What they initially objected to is they did not want vaccine mandates. That is, they didn't want to be forced to take the vaccine. And frankly, I'm fine with them not taking the vaccine if that's what they decide. But now what it has turned to is they want to flip it and they want to prevent those that do want to get the vaccine from getting it. So they're really not being consistent. And look, here's my point of view. If you don't want to get the vaccine, God bless you. Good luck. Now, on the other hand, what I think is tragic is when we help people decide not to get the vaccine by giving them the wrong information. There are lots of decisions that you and I have to make in our lives that we're not expert in, and we need advice from people. And we try to get good information so that we can make a good decision. What is happening here is that these people, knowingly some probably, and unknowingly others who themselves have been deceived, are promoting this disinformation that because I've talked to these people who have only found out that they've gotten duped when they didn't get the vaccine because of disinformation. And that's not fair. Give people the information. Mm-hmm. If you want to get the vaccine, let them get it. You don't want to get the vaccine, don't get it.
Dr. Pate, I mentioned that there were, I believe, 3 to 4 doctors who gave a presentation who were invited to that meeting yesterday to give a presentation about the vaccine. All of them are known misinformation doctors in regards to the COVID vaccine. Some of them have, been fired from their jobs because they were spreading and promoting this information. And what is it like for someone like you, who is a doctor, who ran a health system, who understands the need for vaccines? And I'm not even talking just about the COVID-19 vaccine. I'm talking about vaccines in general. What do folks in the community need to know about these doctors who spread this kind of false information?
You know, it is disheartening. And I talk to many, many doctors who similarly are disheartened, although for various reasons, they're not in a position to speak up. And in my own view and in theirs, it was such a privilege and honor to become a doctor. And we took the Hippocratic Oath. I went into being a doctor to medicine because I wanted to help people. I could not even wrap my head around the idea of purposely hurting people. That's just not something that computes. And what is so disheartening to me is I know some of these doctors, and I know they had excellent medical training, and I know they know how to read the medical literature the way that I do. And while I could excuse some issues early on, there is just overwhelming data now. Many of these answers are known and are very clear today, and yet they have not changed their positions. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's the social notoriety they get, political aspirations they have, financial aspirations. Something is interfering with their normal duty to protect people because they are harming people. And by this point in the pandemic, there's no way that I can imagine that they don't know that. So something terribly wrong has happened to them. And it's just very sad.
Dr. Pate, with that said, I believe this is the first health district in Idaho to make this decision. Are you concerned that there is going to be a domino effect in that now that Southwest District Health has made this decision, will we likely see this decision being made in other health districts across the state?
I hope not, but I expect so. And the reason is I have been following this group of doctors and others carefully, and I can tell you they don't do too many one-offs. This is a coordinated strategy, a coordinated plan of attack. Their interest is not just Southwest District Idaho. They probably saw that as easy pickings in terms of getting their first win. But yes, I expect this to now spread to the other health districts. If you had asked me before this pandemic, would we ever have anti-vaxxers on public health boards, I would have laughed. Now it's a reality. And that's why, in my own personal view, I think the hope for us is Proposition 1 that we're going to vote for, because I think we have to make these political actors responsible to all of us instead of just their base, because the general public doesn't like being lied to. And I think that's the only way we're going to stop this. So fingers crossed.
With that said, Dr. Pate, we got a question in from Sherry that goes along with some of this discussion. And what she says is, can Dr. Pate discuss the relationship between arterial fibrillation and COVID shots or having COVID? A friend of mine is telling her dad to avoid getting the COVID shot because it will cause heart problems, in particular AFib. She says the incidence of AFib is going up because of the shots. Is that true, or is the COVID virus itself causing an increase in AFib?
It's the latter, and we've known this. We started seeing this even before the vaccines became available, and we have very good data now that started coming out years ago showing that after COVID, there was an increased risk for atrial fibrillation. We have not seen that with the vaccines, and we know that the virus does cause quite a number of effects on the heart, and one of them that is commonly seen is atrial fibrillation, an arrhythmia of the heart. And so I think you said it was your father, let him know that actually the vaccines will help protect against, because there's many other cardiac manifestations of infection too. The vaccines help prevent those complications. They don't cause them.
And Dr. Pate, Sherry also wanted to know, what is the current incidence of COVID in Idaho and in the West right now? Do we have information on that?
We do. All across the country, COVID cases are on the decline from a very high peak that we just recently had. Now, some of the South and Southeastern states have recovered more quickly than we have. We're still at moderate levels, and we still have a couple surrounding states, Oregon and Wyoming are at high levels, but we're all on the decline, but there's still a fair amount of it out there in Idaho, but it is on the decline. And the current projections are that the next surge is probably not going to take off for another couple of weeks or so. And of course, I'll be monitoring that, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it, Gemma.
And also, Dr. Pate, because we're in that time of year, can we talk flu shots? Because I know there's even, flu shot clinics going around at schools right now, because, you know, people want to, you know, if you're wanting to get a vaccine, they're making it easier. But are we in a place yet where we should be getting our flu shot, or should we be waiting if we live in this area?
If this is your only opportunity to get the flu shot, and you know that you're not going to get one if you don't get it now that it's being offered, go ahead and get it. But the flu vaccine does have some waning of protection, and the flu season can certainly go into the spring. And so what I try to do for those that are willing to time and will go in to get their flu shot when it's time, I try to let you know when that is so that we can get the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak. And the time is not now. It's very low activities. Now, it certainly could be taking off. This is about the time we often see it, sometimes not until mid or late November. So I'll be watching. But if this is your only chance, just go ahead and get it. But if you are willing to go in when I'm seeing that uptick, I'll let you know. But it's not now.
Dr. Payne, what about if you're thinking about holidays and traveling? I'm thinking about Thanksgiving. It's next month. Folks are going to be traveling more, not just in cars, but in planes. So if you have an upcoming trip, similar advice then to if this is your opportunity, go get it, even if we may not be kind of at that peak level.
Yeah, it depends on where you're traveling to. So for example, if you're traveling someplace internationally and to the Southern Hemisphere, then no, you wouldn't need to get it for that travel. But if you're going to travel somewhere in the United States for the holidays, I do monitor this for the whole country. So I'll be certainly giving weekly updates on your show. And if you're going to travel someplace that already is seeing an uptick, which we're just not in the United States yet, there's very few places in the United States, but by that time there could be. And then yes, you might want to go ahead and get your flu vaccine ahead of time, even if we're not seeing it here in Idaho.
Okay. Before I let you go, Dr. Pate, I want to talk about some news that came out yesterday, and this is from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, because they are reporting that dozens of people across the U.S. have contracted E. coli, and it's being traced to ingredients in McDonald's Quarter Pounders. No shade to McDonald's, but this is what is going on. And there are 49 people from 10 states have gotten ill. One person has died. There are some links back to Idaho. There are people that have fallen ill in Idaho. With that said, can we start with what E. coli is?
Yeah, so E. coli is a bacteria. It's actually an abbreviation for Escherichia coli, and it's normally found in your gut. But that's a healthy kind of E. coli. There is a bad form of E. coli, which is the one we're talking about with McDonald's. It's called the 0157H7, and it's based on the fact that this E. coli produces a bad toxin. And so if you get infected with it, you can get severely ill, and it can cause fever, bad abdominal pain, and bloody diarrhea. And then some people get a complication of that called hemolytic uremic syndrome, where the blood cells it can burst open and it can affect your kidney function. A lot of those people that end up, I think there were 10 cases hospitalized. A lot of people will have some nature of this complication from it. Most people will recover from it. Some will need to be treated, but it's a nasty bacteria. To my knowledge, the CDC's best guess is that it's the particular onions they use on that. And they haven't identified a risk for any of the other food items except the quarter pounders. But obviously, this is a concern, and it does periodically come up in our food chain at times.
Well, and I have to say, Dr. Pate, I mean, I'm dating myself on this one, but this takes me back to the E. coli outbreak that happened at Jack in the Box back, I think it was like 1990. But I remember, and maybe it just sticks with me because I was fairly young, but it was something that I had never heard of before, and it was devastating. This outbreak.
Yeah, it certainly can be, and you've got a better memory than I do. Once you told me about it, I started recollecting it, but I had forgotten about that. But yeah, we do from time to time have these outbreaks, and they're very important to get our arms around it and identify what the food source is that's causing it, because it's by people ingesting the bacteria that they're getting sick.
And folks, you should know that the states that this has been detected in so far: Colorado, Kansas, Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, Iowa, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. So just be aware if you've, you know, eaten at a McDonald's. And I think it's very important to note that McDonald's is working very closely with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In fact, in these states where this is going on, the CDC report that I'm looking at right now says that the McDonald's has actually pulled the quarter pounders from their menu right now as they move through this investigation with the CDC. So with that said, Dr. Pate, very quickly before we wrap up, how long does it usually take to get symptoms if you do get infected with E. coli?
It can vary, but generally we see symptoms occur within several days after ingestion, but it can depend on, you know, how much of that bacteria is in there. Some can be sooner, can be later, but generally the time period is we see it emerge in 3 to 4 days after you've ingested it.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.